Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of the Care What You Wear podcast. I'm your host, Jermaine Caprio, and for those of you familiar with my blog, you know how much my mom influenced my clothing business, Majamas Earth. She was the one who really made me think about how hard the apparel industry is on our planet, and not a day passes that I don't think about her. I'm the youngest of 5, and in honor of Mother's Day, I thought it could be fun to invite my siblings on the podcast to share a few of their favorite memories of our mom. Their stories are funny and relatable, and I think you'll get a vivid picture of who she was and how she influenced all of us. If anything, you'll leave wishing you could have tried her epic cheesecake. Please keep in mind, I interviewed without any fancy recording equipment, and in some cases, I think you can hear one of my sisters washing her dishes and some traffic rolling past one of my brother's houses. Nevertheless, I hope you can appreciate all my mom was and find a connection to your mom or someone in your life who loved and cared for you as much as my mom loved and cared for us. My mom taught us to respect all living things. From spiders to great herons, she helped us understand that every creature is worth saving. We start with my brother Chris and my sister Carol, remembering my mom's habit of taking in orphaned animals, and that even with the best intentions, you can't save all of them.
Well, you know, Mom, there wasn't a creature abandoned or injured that Mom could walk away from. My favorite memory is back in Levittown, and it has to be when I was 7, maybe 8 years old. Somehow, and I don't know how these squirrels showed up at our house, but there were two baby squirrels. And I don't know if a neighbor brought them by, knowing that Mom would rescue them, or if one of us brought them home. I just don't remember. But I do remember our double-sided fireplace.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Once mm-hmm. It was open to the kitchen and to the living room.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty cool setup for the 60s.
Yeah.
It was spring. We weren't using the fireplace, so Mom converted that fireplace to a squirrel cage.
It was more like a squirrel nursery.
Well, they weren't in that fireplace often. It was pretty much where they spent the night. The rest of the time, they were running around. Not through the whole house, but usually on one of us. But the best time was feeding time. Do you guys remember what Mom used to feed?
I do. Mm-hmm.
Peanut butter on Cheerios.
Cheerios with peanut butter. Mm-hmm. And she would let the squirrels out. And I loved it. I was always around when it was feeding time for the squirrels. You'd have one perching on your head and one on your shoulder. And you'd hand them the little Cheerio with the peanut butter on it. And they would just sit there and eat with their little haunts, you know, holding the Cheerios the way squirrels do.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta kind of wonder how she knew it was time to release them to the wild.
When Dad said, we're going to use the fireplace, Shirley.
Do you remember what they all slept in the fireplace?
No.
An old turtleneck sweater. And actually, I think there were three of them. And one would crawl into the neck, and then the other two in each of the sleeves. And that's where they slept. I mean, when you think about it, it's kind of genius. You know, you got abandoned rodents.
Oh yeah,
with fluffy tails. Put them in a sweater, and
she was crazy smart, right, about that.
Yeah,
kind
oh
of
yes.
Thing.
So Carol, you have a memory that you kind of told me ahead of time, and I couldn't stop laughing. You have to share the story.
Mine's pretty funny, I think. Yep. So down in Palmasola, Florida, Mom was surrounded by water, and therefore surrounded by just some incredibly beautiful wildlife, including pelicans, her egrets, herons, and even hermit crabs. And Mom got into a routine of feeding them. And she didn't feed them bits of fish, and she didn't feed them shrimp. She would cut up turkey hot dogs and throw that to the herons and the egrets, and they would eat it. And one of the really large, like super beautiful white herons became a favorite of Mom's and would come at the same time every day. And every day Mom would feed her great white heron. And they had this very sweet little relationship. But what the heron didn't know is that our mother also was feeding hermit crabs that ventured pretty close to the front door of the house during low tide. So one afternoon, she tells this story just around the time that her great white heron is scheduled to come and visit. A hermit crab makes its way right into the front of the house, or inside. So now it's not even on the little carport area. It's inside the house. So here's Mom trying to like salvage the hermit crab so it doesn't get lost someplace in the house. She picks it up and she, I'll say gently, kind of throws it out to the front of the lawn. And just as she's throwing that hermit crab, out comes her great white heron who just swoops down and eats it. So here she's trying to save her one little animal, you know, so to speak.
Now, I just remember her being appalled when she realized that she's giving them turkey dogs and that these birds were eating birds.
That's cannibalism.
She kept saying, I had no idea that birds eat birds.
But hermit crab's eating a bird. I mean, hermit crab eats shrimp, but they don't eat. I mean, they're eating a turkey dog. It's kind of crazy, but
they'll eat anything.
My mom taught us to be inclusive. Regardless of age, she made sure everyone felt like part of the party. Here, my sister Jean recounts her daughters, who were really young at the time, dressing up in my mom's clothes and singing along with all the adults at one of their gatherings in Florida. My mother had a way of making everyone feel like part of the group, and if you were lucky enough to attend, you never left her party hungry.
So I remember her taking your girls every summer to Florida. For a couple weeks, and she kind of pulled them into the act some way too, right? Didn't she?
She did. So she would open up her closet, you know, Mom with the lamé shirts the big earrings, which the girls loved. I mean, they loved going into Mom's closet, and I remember she would dress them up when she would get ready for the parties that they would throw while, you know, the girls were there. The girls would get dressed up in these, you know, the gold lamé shirts and the earrings, she would have them come out because Jennifer had a ukulele that she was learning how to play, and Elizabeth had a little toy piano, and she would pull them up while she was playing the piano, Dad was playing the ukulele, and have them come up and play and sing with them with their gold lamé shirts and their big earrings.
So cute.
Yeah, she kind of carried the tradition on, which was very cute.
Yeah.
Very cute.
I love that. I love that story. Do you remember after football games at Illinois crowding into your apartment? Mm-hmm. You were kind of the first one to do that. And
yeah.
So, I mean, how much food did she bring?
Oh, I know. It was understood after the first one. They realized, Mom and Dad realized, well, this is a good gig. Mm-hmm. So they realized that they could have an ad hoc party that they didn't have to do anything but feed people.
Yeah.
And they would, and, you know, remember Mom would stay at the apartment and she'd stick the lasagnas in the oven. And there was usually two or three of them.
Yeah.
God knows. I mean, in those little apartments, how big was the oven? What was she doing? I don't think we had a microwave. So it wasn't like she could anyway, but she would put these lasagnas in. So when we got back from the game, everything would be ready and she'd be, you know, in her element, feeding the masses.
Right.
Which was always great fun to, you know, have that. And she was always so gracious. And I think she loved it just because she loved the kids.
She loved the kids.
All the people.
And the singing, you know, like Dad would play Duke. I just remember going down there and thinking, I don't remember Mom packing the car with all this food. Because we'd go to where is she getting this from? And she just made like a ton of food. And you'd go into your apartment after the game and it would just, the tables would be loaded with lasagnas and cheese plates and, you know, God knows. Yeah. 'Cause her thing was, if you're drinking, you're eating. You got to eat if you drink.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of, that's one of the things that I've kind of carried through in my mom-isms, that I don't serve alcohol unless I got food going on. So I've kind of carried that, you know, along. Oh, okay. You're going to have a margarita. Well, you need to at least have, you know, some dip.
Chips and salsa.
Let's make a dip out of it. But one of the things I was going to talk about was yesterday was the trip out west. Yeah. Where we all piled in the car and she taught us the harmony to Country Roads.
I love that.
And Springtime in the Rockies.
Yes. Even after that vacation, which I clearly remember, and I wasn't that old, anytime you and Jim would break out into those songs, she'd get kind of teary.
Yeah. You know?
She loved it. It was like that simple little thing just brought her so much joy to see her kids singing together.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was responsible for that. I mean, she's the one who really fostered our love of music.
My mom taught us to appreciate music, so much so that my brother Jim made a career of it. I learned that music has the power to break up tension, and it can even motivate an entire office. I don't know where any of us would be without it.
Jean brought up a really sweet memory that I wanted to ask you about, and that was our trip to the Dude Ranch.
Oh, yeah.
With mom. And I don't know if that was the same one where she taught you and Jean how to harmonize to Country Roads and Springtime in the Rockies. Was that the same
and
one?
It
was?
Don't Fence Me In, also.
And Don't Fence Me In. Okay, okay.
Uh-huh. That's right. Well, you know, first of all, there were two trips there.
Okay.
And it was on one of them, probably the first, where we learned the rudiments of harmony singing,
mm-hmm.
which is great. Uh-huh. And you know, when I think about it, you know, mom was, she had a very how should we say, a foundation like thinking of music. You know.
Yeah.
She was really that was her strong part. You know. And because she knew the inner workings of things musically, she was able to diagram harmony parts.
Yeah. Yeah. She was really good at harmony. And she, I remember, she was a big influence on you for your music. I mean, you are, I think that like her, you play by ear. I think you got that from mom, don't you?
Well, I did. I started out as a piano player, a classical piano player at around 5 years old with Mrs. Schwartz, Donna Schwartz. And what I was a guy that could read music like nobody's business. I was quite the guy, and I was doing Brahms and Bach and Beethoven and Haydn. And I used to get these more and more complicated pieces. But like our mother, I developed a keen sense for singing and playing by ear.
My mom taught us the importance of listening. We learned that paying attention when people are speaking is a sign of respect, and most of all, it shows you really care.
So you'd mentioned a momism. Is there any other momisms that you've carried over with your girls?
I don't know.
I think for me, it's the phone call. You know, like when your girls call you, and mom had that way of making at least me, and I'm sure she did it to you too, feel like if you called her at all during the day, you were all she was talking to. Like she was, she would give you 100% undivided attention.
Yeah.
And she could be in the middle of something and yet make you feel like you know, she really wanted to hear what you had to say.
Right. Yours was the most important thing that she was dealing with. Yeah.
She was all there. She was not distracted. And I really practice. I fail a lot, but I do practice, particularly with my kids, to try to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that left a real wonderful mark on me. She made me feel as if, even if it was something really trite or, you know, what might have been unimportant to the rest of the world or anybody else. She made it feel important to me. And
so
I think that's a wonderful part of, you know, one of her wonderful capabilities or skills, I guess.
And I always remember so clearly her just giving you her undivided attention. I mean, no matter what the issue could have been or whatever was upsetting us. And then, I mean, I don't know, were you like me, like when you heard her voice, did you just burst into tears?
Always, particularly I was really tired and calling on that Sunday night in college, because you only called your parents once a week. And I do remember that feeling, just hearing her voice and, you know, like breaking down. And it wasn't necessarily because you were super sad. Mm-hmm. It was just the relief of knowing that you could hear her voice.
And, you know, she didn't try to solve your problem. She just would listen.
I think she was one of those people that wasn't very quick to judge. Mm-hmm. And I think she did teach us that as well, is to, you know, force yourself to step back. She used to, you'll recall this, that she would always tell us that if something, you know, we had this urge to respond right away to something that had mm-hmm. gotten us upset, and she would remind us to write it down. So mm-hmm. we would write the letter to ourselves. So it was directed to me with all of the anger and whatever else I wanted to spew out to this other person about whatever it was that had me upset, and force us to write it and then put it away. And then the next day, actually look at it again.
And it's great advice, right? especially for emails, because if you get something, something from a client or customer that upsets you. And I mean, I will find myself just answering an email, writing it all out, just spewing it. And then I click delete. And that's all I needed, was to just be able to vent and say that. And, mm-hmm. and then it really was good advice. That's a good one.
Yeah. And then sometimes just being able to go back and look at it and rewrite it. So then it actually, you were able to make your point, but not, you know, with an overwhelming degree of anger woven into it. Well, so
I'm pretty sure none of mine had any good traits. None of those.
No, I think it's probably empathy, but also, you know, wanting to do the right thing, like to make things as right as individuals we can. So I'm going to say it's about 6 months after Mom died, and I was down in Palmasola visiting Dad, and a call came through, and I picked it up, and it was from an organization that collected clothes and any other kind of goods, kitchen goods and that kind of thing, for the migrant workers that came through the state of Florida to mm-hmm. pick oranges and things like that. And they were asking where Shirley Caprio was, because apparently Mom, unbeknownst to me, and I don't think any of us really knew.
I didn't know this.
But Mom supported this group to the tune of, you know, hundreds of pairs of blue jeans a year.
Wow.
For the migrant workers that had come through Florida.
Right.
And
wow.
You know, it's just an empathy is, I guess, a part of that, where she just felt for and always talked to us about the migrants, right? It was one of her
passions. She felt so bad for them. Yeah.
Exactly. And wanted to support. But just the fact that none of us ever knew it. So there's, no bragging rights around it, how great she was, right?
Well, she was humble. Yeah, humble. She was very humble about it.
Grace's thing that she did was that, even though, let's say that she was responsible for 80% or more of whatever we're talking about, of a party, of a trip, of a paperwork, anything, you know, except for the out-and-out mechanical kind of things. Mother always was generous in her splitting the
credit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
She always did that. She never said, well, maybe at the later years. But, you know, I remember, though, that it was always she did give credit, you know.
Oh, yeah.
To Dad, kind of, even if he hadn't done much of, I don't know if it's out. Yeah.
Well, Mom was humble. She almost taught us to be a little too humble, because we wouldn't accept tips. Remember, never accepted a tip.
I can tell you. No, Jermaine, you hit it. And God bless her. But I'll tell you, I never forget a huge snowstorm in Levittown and many sides. I just probably don't remember many sides, but
I do.
It was older. Uh-huh. And they sent me down and I did a job of, I shoveled the walk and shoveled her front walk. And I did the whole thing
in the driveway.
And she gave me $5. Uh-huh. Okay. And this was, you know, job tendered. Everything was good. You know, I was so happy. You know?
Yeah.
That might be one of the first jobs I ever got paid for.
Uh-huh.
And I showed mother and she says, you get back there right away and you give, you give that back. And ever since then, I've always played or worked for less than anybody.
Yeah. It's just the way we were raised. You just, you know, and that's because that's how mom was. I mean, she was really, really giving. She volunteered her time. She never expected anything in return. She volunteered and almost worked more hours than most people getting paid to do the work she was doing. And she would volunteer at our grade school. And I remember walking out into the hallway one day and there was mom standing there. She was like organizing the teacher appreciation luncheon out on the lawn outside of Kellogg. Remember that? And she was setting up the tables and getting everyone, like whoever she got to help her with the food. And it was a huge deal.
She volunteered endlessly. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, never made a big deal or a lot of noise around it, but mm-hmm. she was absolutely there, either making food for something, setting something up, helping with the graduation ceremonies, you know, helping in the mornings when the teachers needed assistance. So another really wonderful characteristic of hers from a volunteering perspective. She was really very, you know, positioned to give to others.
Yeah.
With that time.
She was never meet friends for lunch kind of woman.
Never.
She never did that. Never. Mm-hmm. You know, it was always, you know, what could I do to help others? Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My mom taught us to go above and beyond for others. That's because she knew the power of a handwritten note and the joy a favorite dessert would bring. She knew people would always remember how you made them feel.
There's one thing that I did not do well that mom, I thought, did well. If you remember, she was a good cook. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't a honey cook.
Right.
But she did good, you know, basic stuff. And you talked about her lasagna, but she could make a hell of a cheesecake.
Oh yeah.
Remember her cheesecake?
Yes.
And I was hoping Christopher was going to talk about this, but mom, you know, had slaved one day over a cheesecake for a dinner party she was having that night. Uh-huh. And she asked Christopher to carry it down into the basement fridge. This was in the Beverly house.
Right.
And do you remember what happened?
I remember this.
Getting everything ready for this party and the cheesecake had to go down into the fridge and she hands it off to Christopher.
Next thing Poor Chris.
I know. This wail goes up. And I think that's really the only time. But even then, you know, oh, Christopher, you know, I mean, the resignation that, okay, it's just a cheesecake, but
right.
But I've never mastered her cheesecake. She made a great New York style cheesecake that I've never been able to master, but
she really did. It's a labor of love. You have to leave the oven door open for like 45 minutes at the end or something. And the thing is, I don't remember her process whatsoever. I just remember eating it. I loved it.
Yeah. So good.
I always thought that mom made the best cheesecake, you know, whether it was or not in the big life, I don't know. And I don't care. All I know is that I used to love it. And when I was away at school, that would always be one of the things I would ask for, you know, when I was coming home for the weekend or whatever it was.
Aww.
And and she was doing it. And the only, where I'm getting at as far as the kind of, you know, the, I don't know, sad part was when she was, you know, she didn't have you and Carol and Christopher coming home or being at home anymore. So she gradually fell out of making those kind of things like the cheesecake. So I, you know, I was disappointed about it. But of course, she she made 800 cheesecakes before that. She was a great party meister.
Yeah, she really was. Well, and we were talking earlier about all of her food. You know, every party had to be filled with food, just a, you know, ton of food and ton of people. And it was fun. You know, no one was left out at our house.
No, that's true. In most things that she did, that was kind of like her mantra. Nobody gets left out.
My mom taught us the importance of trusting your intuition. I'm pretty sure we all learned to listen to our gut after my brother Chris received a clear warning from my mother. I know it's this intuition that can make the difference between success and failure, and in some cases, like my brother's, it can even be a lifesaver.
I remember Mom having a premonition about you.
It was one of Mom's intuitive moments.
One of many.
Oh, she was beyond psychic.
Yeah.
She had these feelings, and she knew. They usually, a lot of times they'd manifest themselves in a dream. So I think I was 12, and my good buddy, Tom, and I were trying to figure out ways to connect our radios so we could speak to each other.
And this was way before cell phones.
Goodness. So Tom was a pretty bright guy, and he came up with this idea. Let's run a wire through the sewers your house to my house. And you know, you're 12 years old and you're a boy, and you're just like, oh, that would be just so cool.
So cool.
You know, let's do it.
Okay, but wait, how far were your houses? They were kind of far apart.
But almost 8 city blocks. So that would be about a mile.
So how come this never happened? How did Mom figure this out, that this was going to happen?
We had decided to do it on a Saturday, of course. And it was the big day. Uh-huh. And Mom comes walking in, and she had a look on her face. She goes, Chris, what are you doing today? I said, nothing, Mom. I'm just going to play with Tom. She goes, I had the worst nightmare last night. I dreamt you were in a tunnel, and it collapsed on you. And I had this immediate wave of fear just rush over me because, you know, as a 12-year-old boy, you don't see any downside to going in a sewer without any documents laying it out, with any blueprints at all. You're just going to follow the sewer lights. This fear just washed over me. And I immediately told her what we were planning on doing.
Oh, my gosh. She must have been frantic.
Mom was out of her mind frantic. You can't do that. It's so dangerous. And you know, she put the fear of God in me.
Rightly so.
You know that as an adult, I'm claustrophobic. Uh-huh. And I think that the fear she put in me and going into that tunnel has something to do with me being claustrophobic. It was just an amazing example of Mom's foresight. She just had feelings. It was crazy.
Yeah, she was definitely psychic. I have a memory that she might have bought you boxes of cereal for presents. Did she do
that? You know what? That we were restricted as to what cereal we could eat at home.
I know, cornflakes. That was it. Not even the frosted ones, just plain old cornflakes, wasn't it?
Cornflakes, Wheaties, and Cheerios.
Yeah.
That was it. So for my birthday 1 year, and I actually did this several years, all I wanted was Captain Crunch. It was great because I got all this Captain Crunch, but my siblings ended up eating as much of it as I did.
I don't remember that.
Oh my goodness. You guys went nuts on it.
We were so lucky to have her as our mom. She was smart and goofy at the same time, but always so thoughtful. And that intuition she had about you going in a tunnel to this day, kind of, you know, whenever I see those stories about a little kid that's fallen down a well or something, I think, right. God, that could have been Chris. Like, that could have been you. Yeah. So I guess in a way she saved your life.
Well, I guess we'll never know, but
no.
She probably did.
My mom taught us to appreciate a good sense of humor, and even though she loved puns, she knew it took intelligence to be able to think fast and have a quick wit.
Our mother laughed a lot.
Yeah. And
she found humor in other people's jokes. She was always a good audience for jokes.
She loved puns. She was a punster.
Right. So those are the kind of... She loved when someone would come up with a little interesting word joke. That's the kind of thing.
Well, because I think, you know, you had to be clever to come up with something like that. She really appreciated intelligence. My story has to do with my business. And after I had Adelaide, most people who know how Majamas got started, I was really tired of wearing a bra to bed at night. And we had one of the few moms that nursed her babies back in the 50s and 60s when other women were moving to formula. Mom nursed us. And so I remember calling her and saying, Mom, I can't sleep. I'm in this bra all the time. And I whipped up this kind of contraption. It's a tank top. And so I got it patented and I just needed a name for it. And so I called Mom because she loved puns. You know how much Mom loved puns. Mm-hmm. Anything mm-hmm. that had to do with the pun.
Funny.
So I'm like, Mom, you got to name this for me. I need a name for this clothing line. I think I'd like to show it to Nordstrom. And she's like, okay, honey, let me think about it. So the next day she calls me and she's like, Jermaine, I was up all night. I have the best name for your garment line. And I was like, Mom, what is it? And she's like, you got to call it Milk Duds. Like, Mom, I'm pretty sure the candy company wouldn't appreciate that.
It's not like, going to go.
On the kind of casual end of the call, she's like, okay, well, if you don't think that's good enough, just name it Majamas. And I was like, wow. Instead of pajamas. Mom, and she was like, Yeah. Like, she was so like, yeah, but that's not my best work. The Milk Duds was my best work.
My mom died almost 23 years ago, but that doesn't mean she's gone. Her influence lives in all of us, and without her, I wouldn't have set such high standards for my business, Majamas Earth. I know none of us would be who we are today without her influence on our lives. I want to give special thanks to my siblings, Jim Caprio, Gene Watt, Chris Caprio, and Carol Ungaretti for taking the time to share their memories with me. Thanks for listening. Wishing everyone a very happy Mother's Day. Stay well.
Even to this day, I don't think you ever get used to the fact that your mom or any parent is gone, but you mm-hmm. kind of accept that it happened. But I right. still, you know, I still find myself picking up the phone to call her when I mm-hmm. want to tell her mm-hmm. something about, you know, something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's just kind of where I am.
We hope you'll visit us at majamas.com. There you'll find our sustainable collections and links to our blog, wearemajamasearth.com, where you can learn more about our guests and our passion for the planet. We hope you'll follow us on Instagram and Pinterest at majamas_earth and on Facebook at majamasearth.